You are listening to the Epic Podcast, the show for maverick women entrepreneurs who are ready to kick the status quo to the curb like last year's Louboutins, elevate their brands, and create market-disrupting businesses. I am your host, Kelly O'Neill, and it's time to get epic, ladies. Let's dive into this week's episode. On this episode of the Epic Podcast, I'm going to dive into a story and a share that I've actually never shared with the world at large before. I'm going to talk about my own personal journey to Epic, and I'm going to be sharing a lot about the childhood that I grew up in that is going to surprise a lot of you. I'm going to be sharing about things that I've struggled with as a, not only as a woman, as a survivor of abuse, and as a woman CEO who has made the commitment to live my most epic life. I'm going to talk to you about the struggles that I overcame in the process and some of the traits and habits and beliefs that I adopted that pulled me through to the other side. You know, the story is really candid and, you know, it's vulnerable. And I, you know, again, I've not really shared it with people, not because I'm ashamed of it, because it made me the person that I am right now, but because sometimes for other people, it can make them uncomfortable. So my hope and inspiration is that this inspires you to have your epic epiphany, that those of you who have suffered or you're survivors of abuse, you can know that you get to create the life that you desire. And we all have the opportunity to choose epic every day. Enjoy the episode. Welcome back, everyone. So in the last episode, I talked all about the concept of what living an epic life is and how we were conditioned to really create mediocrity in our lives and the things that I talked about, the things we often tolerate and how that happens and how we can make that switch and choose epic. And then that journey to really get to that place of epic, which is not a 5-minute process, and how once we're in that place, we stay epic. And I want to share with you my own personal journey because I want you guys to know what it really takes in order to create this. And that for those of you who maybe came from backgrounds where you were not set up for this, I want you to know that you're not alone. This is not something I've really shared publicly. I've been a public figure for more than 20 years. I've been running businesses, speaking, podcasting, media interviews. And this is not something I've really shared, but I feel that it is time to share this. So for those of you who have followed me in the past, you know that I grew up in a very affluent family in the Silicon Valley. And that's part of what gave way for me to be teaching the Marketing to Millionaires program for, you know, over a decade and becoming known as one of the leading experts in the world in marketing to affluent clients. And it's because I was brought up in this very wealthy family. But what I haven't shared is what was going on behind closed doors that ultimately, you know, as painful as it was the catalyst for me to really have the life that I'm living now and for me to be doing the work in the world that I'm living now. So I want to share this with you and see if, you know, some of this may resonate with you and some of it might just be a good story for you. But we all have our own stories of how we were conditioned in the world to create the experience that we are living today. And for many of us, we've had to really do a lot of work on ourselves, or we are doing a lot of work on ourselves in order to create something different. So when I was born, right, we'll go back to the very beginning. I swear to God, I think I came out of the camera looking for a mic and wanting to know when my photo shoot was. I was the truest, or am the truest definition of a natural born leader. You know, when we sit around at Christmas tables and people are meeting my friends, or people, my family, you know, meets some of my friends or my romantic partner, they would describe me as fiercely independent and like a spitfire and headstrong. And I remember even I ran into my kindergarten teacher and she was telling me on her report card, you know, that it said Kelly can be kind of bossy at times and often takes charge of situations. And that's totally true. And let me just tell you that nothing is different today. And today, when I think we have a society that is a lot more, you know, where the emotional quotient, the EQ is higher, and we've got a lot more information out there about conscious parenting, you know, back when I was born, which was in 1973, let me just tell you that my parents were not equipped with these skills. So while today many parents would probably nurture these qualities in a young lady, my parents were not equipped to handle really what I would now call, like if it was my child, I would call it an extraordinary child, a child that really broke the norms and was a go-getter and was naturally positioned to lead. So my parents weren't equipped to that. In fact, my parents were not very emotionally healthy. I was actually raised, while it be a very wealthy family, and what a lot of people get shocked to know, because on the outside, everything looked really picture perfect. And by the way, that was by design. But behind closed doors, it was extremely dysfunctional and volatile. And my mother was a severe alcoholic. She was abusive. She was very unstable. And my father is what I later learned is a narcissist. And because of those things, you know, and because of their wounding and them not doing the work on themselves, they just simply were not able to provide a nurturing and loving environment. And so I learned at a very young age to adapt to my environment. I learned not to rock the boat, because literally it was, for me, you know, especially in a child's body, it felt like, you know, this was life or death. Like if I rocked the boat or if I stepped out of line, like I was going to get hurt, either physically hurt or definitely emotionally and psychologically hurt. And I certainly wasn't going to get the love of my parents, which, as you know, if for those of you who study psychology, like every child looks for the love of their parents. And so, you know, I was very determined to fit to the mold of what I was supposed to be, right? And I was conditioned into this mediocrity at a very young age. So I was raised with a lot of messages, especially because they were trying to hide all of this going on behind closed doors. You know, we lived in a very affluent community. My father owned a business. You know, he was sat on boards of charities and of different corporations. He, you know, we belonged to the country club. Like these things, no one wanted these things to get out. So I was taught things like good little girls sit still and look pretty, and children are to be seen and not heard. And, you know, if someone wants to hear your opinion, they'll ask for it. And my favorite one as I got older is, you know, hey, it's better to keep your mouth shut and let everyone think you're stupid than to open your mouth and prove it. And the all too often, as I started to realize, like, wait a minute, this seems pretty different than what you're doing. You know, you're telling me to do one thing and then you're doing something totally different. And then I would get the, yeah, do as I say, not as I do. Got it. Okay. So I was conditioned that in order to receive any form, you know, any type of love and safety, frankly, I'd been conditioned to obey and adopt their belief systems and do as I was told. And what that did, you know, in retrospect, right? In retrospect, is it really trained thinking out of me, because my job was not to think. My job was to do what I was told and to basically be good. And the more good that I was, I might get thrown a crumb of love, or at least I wasn't going to get beat to shit, right? So that's what it was like living in an abusive home. And day by day, my little fire inside would diminish to a flicker, and my voice was really squelched. Well, you know, obviously I survived. When I was 11, my parents divorced. And in some ways, it was a huge relief, but in some ways, it was really terrifying for me, because even though my father was really not it was not a good situation. It was way worse when I was older, but at least when I was younger, at least he just kind of, you know, gave the impression like he didn't care. Like I was kind of an accessory in his life. But my mother was scary. And so it was really terrifying. And so I became really somewhat of a daddy's girl, and I lived and breathed to seek this man's approval. But now I was living in this home with my mom, who was, she hated my father, and she really didn't like me because I was quote unquote exactly like my father. But I knew how to play the game, and I knew how to mold to the version that was acceptable and keep myself safe. And I kind of was adapting myself in my life to create that situation. So I became, you know, which is very typical of children of alcoholics. I became, you know, either they kind of become screw offs or they become hyper driven. I became hyper driven. And so I got into sports because I was getting some love and approval on that ground. And I became like, it wasn't just that I would be in sports. I wanted to be the best. And I trained and I was disciplined. I mean, when I was a swimmer, I was in that freaking pool at 4:30 a.m. rain or shine, freezing or normal. And I also set my sights on really becoming an excellent student because that's what I had control over. So in my world, I was like, I'm going to rock it out in school and I'm going to rock it out as an athlete. And while I really never got praise from my parents directly, I would hear it as they were bragging about it to someone else, which is such so interesting because again, they were just trying to paint the picture. Well, when I was 15, I had my first, what I would call fuck that moment. And I had a life-changing epiphany. And it's something I actually describe now as a little bit of a God glimpse in that, you know, it was after school, it was swim practice. I didn't have my license yet. So my mother had to come and pick me up. And true to form, she was drunk. And what ended up happening was a kid who had just gotten his license in my class by accident hit the back end of my mom's car, and he bumped the fender. It wasn't like he did. He just, you know, I mean, we were young. We were just learning to drive, but he shattered the back window. The minute that I saw that, I immediately got chills up my spine because I knew what was coming down the pipe, and exactly what I knew was coming down exactly is what happened. And, you know, I tried to defuse the situation with my mother, but she was drunk and she, you know, got out of the car and she tore into this kid. Well, I backed myself away from the scene because I was so humiliated, which was a feeling I was getting very used to. I was very used to being humiliated by my parents. So I backed myself away from the scene as she tore into him. And I remember, I will never forget this moment. 15 years old, I was wearing cutoff Guess jean shorts and a green and blue striped tank top. My hair was still wet. I can still smell the chlorine from being out of the pool. And I was standing under this oak tree at my high school. And I remember thinking to myself, like, fuck this. You know, my parents, like I made a decision. I had this moment of clarity. I don't even know. That's why I call it a God glimpse. I don't know where it came from, but I remember thinking to myself that like, I was never going to live my life like this. And I was not going to allow like the way that my parents modeled life. I was like, that's not going to be my life. Like, I'm not going to live like this. And I remember having this distinct knowing, and I even telling this right now, I've got chills. I remember thinking, I'm never going to live my life like this. And I am not going to create a life where this is how I roll. And I was going to be a person in this world that actually contributed in a positive way. And I was going to leave this world a better place than when I came into it, despite what I had faced. And I also had enough knowledge at that age to know that in order to do that, I had to be out of my parents' control. And in order to get out of that control, I had to have my own money, because as long as I was financially dependent on them, although let me just tell you, I also worked, so I was paying for all of my extra stuff. But they were still, I was tied to being under their roof and for them to feed me. And I didn't know how, but I knew that's what I had to do. And in that moment, my fire became rekindled, and it became a guiding point for the decisions I made from there forth in my life. And so I did, I worked my ass off in school, and I got into college, and I went to college, and I worked my ass off in college. And I made that decision that, like, I need to get out. I need to be independent. And so I did, when I was 19 years old, I was in college, and I started my first internship. Not only was I working as a nanny, I was taking a full load at school, but I also got an internship so that I could start my career. And I had some great advice from a family friend who actually employed me at his agency and said, Kelly, you need to be a PR person. And there's a longer story there, but he's like, come do an internship with me. And then they hired me on after that. And when I got into that place and I started to have some more money of my own, and I was working in the world, because I did the internship and then I got hired on. So I started my career at age 19 years old. And I took my babysitting money, and because my parents would not let me go to counseling. And I was like, I need help. Like, I need to break these. Like, I had some awareness that I needed to break these patterns because they were not healthy for me. And I started going to a counselor, and I found a counselor that would do work with me for $20 a session, which I could afford. And that became how I started to rise from the ashes. Like, I am like a phoenix that constantly rises from the ashes. And because of that determination and that initial bigger why of, like, I've got to get independent, that's what I did. And I started to make a series of really smart decisions in my life. Now, here's the other thing that was happening for me. I was getting love, right? Because I was such a go-getter and I was so committed, and I had such a strong work ethic. And also, I had gotten into a field where I naturally excelled. PR was easy for me. Strategy is easy. It's innate in me. And I was able to work myself up really quickly because, again, not only did I need to get the hell out from under their payroll, but I also, I was getting all this love and praise. And I quickly kind of established myself as a phenom in the industry. Like, my bosses would tell me all the time, like, you are not a typical college kid. You are going to do really well. And I was determined to soak up all that knowledge and to make enough money to get the hell out, because failure was simply not an option. And that's exactly what happened. I got into my career, and I intensely studied how the most successful people in my industry operated. By the way, at that time, it was primarily men. And I hustled and grinded my way to the top, fighting my way into the boardroom, and then earning every single opportunity to stay there. And frankly, I loved every single second of it. And I became a multi-six-figure executive at a technology company by the time I was 27 years old. I was one of two female executives in a company that was run by older, middle-aged gentlemen. And that's really where I was able to break myself free. So I was ahead of the curve, but I was still struggling. When you are born and raised in that environment, you've got a lot to overcome. I had a lot of things with my self-worth that had to be overcome from being, constantly told I was worthless and I wasn't loved. And, I had a lot to overcome. And while I was working on my career and I really excelled in that, I constantly was, fighting these demons of overcoming traits of being raised by an alcoholic and being traits of being psychologically abused. In fact, I was actually later in my life, which many people don't know, I was diagnosed with CPTSD, which is chronic PTSD, which happens when you are raised in a home like that. That can often happen, especially for someone who is sensitive, which I am. I'm incredibly intuitive. I'm incredibly energetically sensitive. And so when you combine those two things, it's literally a miracle that I am not, like, you know, living on the streets, a drug addict and a prostitute, right? It's like, I just went the complete other way. Well, in 2001, you know, after managing seven-figure brand agency budgets and managing these huge accounts for corporations and then working in corporations like Intuit and Kingston Technology and Epson and things like that, I decided I no longer wanted to be employed by someone else. And so I wanted to start my own company, and I met extreme resistance to this idea. Now, partially here I am thinking he's going to be really proud of me because he's an entrepreneur. Well, no, he wasn't. And he was telling me, like, no one's going to listen to you. Like, no one's going to listen to you. No one wants, you know, what consultants do, what other people can't do. You're going to fail. And when you do, you're not coming home. And at this point, I started to utilize those things as a bit of a challenge. You know, one of my friends, Holly Dowling, says, you know, tell me no and watch me go. And that really is how I roll. So when someone's like, you can't do that, I'm like, right, hold my latte. Watch this. And that's actually an attitude that I adopted. That's one of my epic, you know, kind of attitudes and traits that I adopt that really helped me to succeed. So in 2001, I launched a brand marketing and PR consulting firm. And in my first year, I broke $300,000. So not only was I now free, now I was like thinking to myself, oh my gosh, they're going to, I mean, I don't know why. I feel like Charlie Brown with the football, setting myself up to success. They're going to be so proud of me because I'm not only am I self-employed, but I broke the statistic. Like, I'm successful. Well, that was not the case, right? But it meant to me, like, that I could do this on my own. And that's when other people came to me and they started asking me for my advice and about how to build a business. And this is when I really started studying deeply business strategy. I knew how to get clients, right? I knew about marketing and PR, but I needed to know how to become the top of my game. And while I was able to do that in business, I was still getting sucked down in so many ways in my personal life, overcoming these inner demons. And, you know, really my come from a place where I was working so hard was not healthy. And, you know, I was no stranger to working hard. I can do it really hard. I hustled, I grinded, I worked very hard. I'd done it in athletics. I've done it in school. I did it in corporate, but I knew something was off, and that the advice I was receiving from various leaders as I started trying to scale my business, you know, what I would call these business coaches, which weren't actually business coaches. That's a whole nother episode. It really wasn't leading me to the kind of success. In fact, the more money that I made, the less that I was keeping. So I was actually making seven figures and making way less than I was when my business was making $300,000. And being resilient, I was like, oh, I just got to keep at this, right? And that drive and determination kept me going. But this was kind of the first time that my work was not paying off and I was starting to lose steam. And it, you know, that combined with the trauma, and also things were getting worse and worse and worse in my family life. You know, my father at this point pretty much hated me because, you know, the best, because I was out shining him. And that, you know, narcissists don't like that. And so I was constantly struggling with these battles. And I was trying to succeed, but at the same time, I started to get into this pattern of not wanting to succeed that much because I didn't want my dad to hate me. Right. And for several years, I got stuck at an income level where it was just enough for me to be successful and live the life, but not too much so that he wouldn't speak to me. Again, being conditioned into mediocrity. And these sorts of things, you know, I battled these things, but I was persistent. I was tenacious and I was committed. And I did the work. You know, I went to coaching school and I did the work on myself, and I hired a variety. I mean, I was in therapy for 13 years. I did a lot of trauma therapy. I did a lot of alternative therapy with EFT, which is tapping, and various different things to support me with overcoming PTSD. I have worked with spiritual healers and shamans and Reiki practitioners, and I still do to this day, because I truly believe that our business will only grow to the extent that we do. But this is how I got on this path to Epic. It's like, first I had to understand, like, wait a minute, this isn't normal. Like, I had created a lot, even though it sounds like on paper I was super successful, behind the scenes, I'd created a lot of mediocrity. I was tolerating things I shouldn't have. I was tolerating abusive relationships with men. I was tolerating abusive relationships with friends. I was tolerating abusive relationships in business. I was tolerating tons of abusive relationships and dysfunction in my family. And so it was kind of like I was always taking like one step forward and two steps back, and then three steps forward and one step back. And it really was this give and take. And I will say that while I was living a pretty good life, I was not living epic. I was tolerating a lot of bullshit in my life. And that became the journey for me. You know, when I talk about, like I did in the last episode, like, first you have to make that choice to be epic. Well, I made that choice. But then the thing was, is that when I made that choice and I envisioned it, I envisioned the life I thought that people wanted for me. That was a huge epiphany. I envisioned the life that I thought was going to be accepted by my family, that I thought was going to be accepted by my peers. I envisioned the life that I thought everyone else wanted for me, and what society told me was what I should have. Well, it got to the point where I had another fuck that moment. And that's when I realized that a lot of the coaching industry bullshit, like these people that I was studying with, and I was utilizing their methodologies to build my business, and they were actually breaking my business. You know, whereas before, I had this very simple business model and I was following corporate practices and I was doing really well. Well, the minute that I started following all of their methodologies and all of this like mass marketing bullshit and all of this, like, you need to have group programs and you need to do it this way and you need to have a business like mine. And I realized now I was doing the same thing that I had done in my life, which was I was building a business that was essentially the type of business that I thought would be acceptable by my peers to get the kudos. And it was costing me. It was costing my health. It was costing my finances. It was costing my relationships. And I really had this epiphany when I literally broke down, because I was like, I don't understand why I can't make this successful. And I finally, in a moment of vulnerability, because again, I'd been conditioned to hide the back end. That's what we did in my world. But in a moment of vulnerability, I started having some conversations with fellow entrepreneurs, and I realized I was not the only one who these methodologies weren't working for. And I had a specific situation happen where I was in a room full of what was supposed to be conscious leaders who ended up being the most unconscious human beings that I'd ever worked with, where they tried to, they basically attacked me while I was on stage. You know, that if you listen to the first episode, I talk about the crabs trying to pull people down who are scaling to the next level. Well, that's exactly what happened. And in that moment, I had another fuck that moment. I was like, fuck this coaching industry. I am not doing this. And when I started to see the stuff that was going on behind the back ends of these businesses, I was like, I'm out. I am not co-signing this bullshit. Like, I am not doing this. I don't want to be called a coach. I don't want to be doing this. Like, this is not what I want. This is not the way that business is supposed to be. And it really caused me to go back and reevaluate my next chapter. I mean, look, life and business, they were pretty good. I mean, they were definitely better. They looked definitely better than a majority of the human beings out there. But again, I was in this place of toleration, and I went back to the drawing board. And that's actually in that work, in that 3 years, while I went back and I started just doing some outsourced chief strategy officer and CEO services for emerging growth companies. Like, I worked for a naturopathic doctor and helped them scale. And this is still a service I provide today. And I realized as I was doing that, and as I started studying, and I got out of this whole coaching industry, and I started studying with actual business experts, you know, people that helped corporations, people that really spoke business. They spoke about profit, not revenue. They were not all about like all this, you know, woo-woo crap. Like, oh, you can just sit on your couch and manifest it. Because no, you can't. I mean, I definitely believe in manifestation, but like, you know, pray and move your feet, people. Pray and move your feet. And so in that epiphany, I reevaluated my career and I really realized and identified exactly what was going on in the coaching industry and exactly why the entire, and the business coaching industry was setting people up to fail. And that's when I came out with the profitology process. And that was a game changer for me. It was a game changer for me because now I was really clear on the business that I wanted. I was really clear on the finances I wanted. And I was becoming more clear on the life that I wanted. You know, what I realized was like, I didn't want the 10,000 square foot mansion. That was not what I wanted. I wanted freedom. And from that period, which was like about 2015, up until the time of the pandemic, I was honing more in on Epic, but without guidance, right? I didn't have the framework for it at that time. I was building the framework, utilizing my life as my own case study for it. And then again, I had, you know, this other, you know, epiphany when the pandemic hit and, you know, I was moving my direction more in my business, more in that direction. And I was making those changes and I was living life more and more on my own terms. And then I had in 2019, what I will call a dark night of the soul. I had gotten into a relationship with a man and had become engaged to a man who was extremely psychologically abusive to me. And again, I don't share this. I don't really share this that much. But let me just say that I was a hot mess. And it really became the dark night of my soul because it was that relationship, because it was so traumatizing. And when I came back home and I knew that I had to heal because I was never going to recreate. I mean, the amount of bullshit that I tolerated was unbelievable. Like I look at myself back then and I'm like, I don't even know who that girl was. I was strong before I went into that relationship, but it was so much like a mirror of the experience I had growing up that it just broke me. And it ended up being a beautiful thing because when I came back, just like I became determined in my life growing up to get out from under the control, I then became determined to get out from under the emotional control of the patterns that had created my life. That was the moment that I started working with my spiritual counselor, my shaman, who I still work with today. And that is when I really was like, fuck this. I will never do this again. I went into a deep, deep working on myself period. Because you guys, I did not think I was going to survive that, to be honest with you. It broke me. It broke me financially. It broke me physically. It broke me emotionally. It broke me psychology. And I just thank God that I had some amazing friends around me. And my spiritual advisor and my puppies. And really, I also was so grateful when the pandemic came around because that provided me the opportunity to spend that time alone. And that's when I designed my Epic. That's when I said, this is the exact life that I want. And through the healing work that I did, I was able to say, this is the exact life I want. And I am not willing to tolerate any less. And I used that time during the pandemic to shore those things up, just like I talked about in episode one, to really shore those things up. And I became very committed. So by the time that we roll around to where I am today, I was very clear of my three goals and I have hit 2.5 out of those three specific goals. One was around finances. One was around my finding my life partner. And one is around my health journey. And that is the work now. That's where I am today. I decided what that epic was, and I've been bringing that vision to life on a day-to-day basis ever since. And this is where that discipline comes in, where I do take that care of myself, and I give myself that time so I don't slide back into those patterns. And I have the support people around me that keep me in my epic zone. And if I slide out of that, or I, you know, fall asleep at the wheel for a second and I start to go back to those old patterns, I'm very quick to slap myself out of it. Or not slap myself, I'll snap myself back out of it. I mean, sometimes I might need a good slap, but I will break myself out of that pattern and I will go back. But it's only because I am providing myself with the support system and with the constant delve into that epic world that I have been able to do that. And, you know, is my life perfect today? No, I'm always going to be a work in progress. And as is everybody, just recently I completely changed the dynamic of my company. I've come out with, I up-leveled my vision and I'm getting it closer and closer, but it's because I give myself that time to identify what my epic is. And then I reevaluate it. Is this still my epic? And what do I need to shore up now? And what do I need to shore up now? And I give myself the time, space, and support to make that happen. So today, that's what I am up to in this world. I am living my epic every single day. I am helping my clients do the same. And through this podcast, I am hoping to help you do the same for you in your life. Like I said, your story may look different. Perhaps you didn't have the trauma I did. Perhaps your trauma was significantly worse. What I want you to know is it is possible for you to have your cake and eat it too. It is possible for you to have the life that you desire. It's about really deciding what that epic life and business looks like and then creating the plan to get it. I hope that you have found my story helpful. I hope that it's been inspiring. Totally open for questions about it. And if you want to connect with me, connect on social and we'll chat. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Epic Podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Epic Podcast. And if you did, please share this show with other amazing women entrepreneurs and leave us a review so that we can reach more women who are ready to get epic. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday for a new episode. I love to get connected with my listeners and see what awesomeness you are up to. So if you'd like to get on the insider's track, subscribe now to my VIP list where you can text with me directly, receive exclusive content not available to the public, and get epic behind the scenes information and resources to uplevel your game. Subscribe now at connectwithkelly.com.